there's some opportunities that may present themselves in the administration at that flexibility. We put together a group with a couple of elders and our staff and actually put together a criteria against which we would measure any kind of an opportunity. It has to do with being able to add to the assessment of the city, be able to do jobs, be able to fit into the comprehensive plan.
Just many improvements.
Pardon?
That criteria, so we all could recite them.
I mean, I.
Excellent.
So, you've got it committed to memory?
Maybe not precisely.
Matt does.
Yes.
So what happened? I mean, we had two meetings where the discussion about those criteria and having to finalize there was a group that there just been, it's been to staff since there hasn't been a project to use those funds for right now.
Correct.
Nothing's met those criteria.
There's some things that meet some of the criteria, but then it's a question of being able to negotiate a deal and see if it makes sense. Being able to bring the alders involved in the situation onto the table and having some clear idea of what the exit is. Because remember, one of those criteria was not to bank this stuff forever.
Right. But
we don't want to compete with Doug.
Is that fund then available at staff's discretion? How does it get,
no,
let's say you found the right site.
If we found the right site and we'd ask for buy-in of the staff in real estate and planning and the alders involved, and then we'd have to go through the common council for approval. It is not a discretionary fund.
Okay, so it's approved in budget, but still the project itself has to be approved.
Mm-hmm. It would only take, if we had to do this extra budget, it would take a 3/4 vote the way it's set up now because we already had an approval, which is a simple majority on the part of the common council to authorize the expenditure.
Any other questions? The couple of projects you mentioned, any sense as to timing when they could break ground, like Erdman or Mullen?
Erdman is working its way through the various committees now. Mullen is stuck with trying to work out something that would be acceptable to the neighborhood. This is the Regent Neighborhood Group,
mm-hmm.
the Regent Neighborhood Association. And Mullins is working with their designers, architects, and developers to find out what can work there from a financial perspective. The big sticking point is there's a, as you know, Campus Drive rises to about 3 stories at that particular spot. So in order to be able to have space that works both for residential or office space, it would have to go higher than that, just simply because it's a little bit tough to sell an office or a home underneath a bypass or an overpass. The neighborhood has not put together a neighborhood plan. They had one that they tried to put together several years ago. But the neighbors that had put it together and been involved with it then took it to the other neighbors who didn't like it. And so they became basically dead. So they're trying to work through that process to come up with a plan. And when they do, we'll see how it all fits together. In the meantime, the owner of that property, those numbers of properties there in that kind of a small triangle block that the Lombardinos is anxious to do something. Number of vacant buildings there that they have not attempted to fill because they really do want to redevelop the block. It desperately needs redevelopment. They're prepared to move ahead, and it kind of came from a discussion that we had with them last year. Give us the top couple of projects that you would like to do and you're prepared to do, and then pick the one that you think has the best market potential in a difficult period. This is the one, and now they're just trying to work through it.
Tim, to think about the budget, city budget, we're obviously looking at decreases, but I'm sure there'll be new budget proposals. And will we have a chance to discuss that, and when is there a deadline for that?
I don't know if budgets ever came to the EDC. The EDC really isn't an oversight board to the Economic Development Division. More of an advisory board to the mayor and to the county. able to do that. It's just what it is today, and we have to be able to deal with what we have today. So we're turning our sights a little bit more internally. The mayor has given the charge to the EDC and staff to take a look at the whole process. So let's get the product in shape as best we can, and then when we're in better times and we can go out, or we're having some inquiries, we're ready to move on.
In the past, I think we have had the opportunity to support some of the recommended capital expenditures and or staffing, and then that allows, you know, hopefully allows some of those things to maybe take shape in the actual budget.
On the capital side, we're really rolling everything in through the Department of Planning, Community, and Economic Development. We are putting in some requests for some projects and some things that we're doing that actually maybe would be TIF eligible as far as reimbursement goes, which helps us a little bit on the budget. Matt, any other comments on the capital budget?
No, I mean, we've submitted, you know, our department budget to the mayor. It doesn't really include any new projects. Everything that's in there are really continuing existing city projects, and the mayor issues his executive budget to the council, I believe, in September.
It's hard to, I just don't believe there will be any new projects citywide. And so not to project some kind of an effort to get into a queue, I think somebody will get something to hire somebody somewhere, I predict.
So, I mean, think of the big projects we have. I mean, the biggest one, and probably the one that has the most opportunity to defy and add tremendous value to the city, are two big ones, which is East Washington and what the mayor is calling Public Market Square. Public Market Square is going to definitely need some investment simply because we've got a deadline now, the downtown rail station, requiring at least 300 parking stalls. We've made the decision has been made that we're going to try to plant those stalls, put them underground as part of a downtown parking redo, getting rid of Pavilion East, and being able to preserve the air rights. There's very few places in the city, because of the elevation over the water table, that you can actually go down for parking. This happens to be one of them. Being able to preserve the air rights and basically monetize those air rights gives us a great opportunity to add significant assessed value into the city. When you take a look at, for instance, Block 89, that's $55 million of new assessed value. When you take a look at what we have here today, it's zero. It's the parking garage in the municipal building we're in, and then a lot of open parking in the back and open space. So that offers a tremendous opportunity. It also offers tremendous challenges. What do we do with the people that are in this building, planning, employee resources, and economic development, while that building is being built out? So we're going to have to deal with this temporary space needs and decide what we're going to do long term. We also, in order to be able to bury parking, we have to know what goes above the parking. And that's a little bit problematic because in this environment, there aren't a lot of people clamoring for downtown space. So we're working with some people to take a look at what can go above it. That way we can plan how strong the parking area is underneath as far as what it can support. It's one thing if you're supporting a hotel, nothing, another if you're supporting a public plaza, still another if you're supporting office space. All that has to play in, but it has to play in fairly quickly because we've got to have this thing ready by 2013, according to the Department of Transportation, to meet the needs for high speed rail. So that's big. The other big one, like I said, is East Washington Avenue. We keep talking about a 25-year time frame on that, but it's a 25-year time frame with maybe $1 billion worth of potential. Maybe I've said this before, Block 89 is assessed at $58 million. The entire TID that we have surrounding the East Washington corridor is valued at $58 million. We can put two Block 89s on each of those blocks. So there's tremendous, tremendous potential there.
I guess I would like to ask if we could have a few minutes dedicated on our agenda to probably our September meeting, after the mayor's budget proposal was filed, to get just an update from you on to walk us through specifically what was in the department's request and the division's request, and also to hear what's in the mayor's budget proposal that is sort of within our realm and have a few minutes to discuss that at that meeting. I like Doug, and that sounds very helpful in the past, and it's given us a chance as a committee to think about are there items in these budget proposals that we as a committee want to strongly support, or council to include in their final budget? Are there items that we feel like in tight budget times really aren't as necessary, and that we want to send some kind of message on that as well? So if there's once that has come out, if we were able to do that, if others agree, I find that very helpful.
Yeah, I think that's even too late.
Well, it would have to be after the, I don't know what's in the mayor's budget until he releases it, so it would have to be after that.
But I know, but I mean, are we making economic development-oriented suggestions to the mayor for what could be included?
Well, we could do it based on the department's budget request, or you want even earlier than that to inform the department. I mean, that would have to be basically now. Until we can't discuss it tonight.
Or we could put some kind of a briefing together for the meeting in August 18th. I don't know how much detail we'll be able to get into it. I just don't know the schedule right now as far as where it's going to stand with the mayor at that point, the budget process. This is a long, convoluted process the city has to go through to be able to pull together a budget. But we'll see what we can do to pull it together and have some kind of a report for the EDC and have a scheduled discussion on the 18th of August.
Sounds good. Chris, on a different topic, you mentioned something on John Nolan, Metcalf, and going into detail.
Yeah, Tim Metcalf has been working with Vanderwall on what Ed would position as a big grid. The idea, and I think this goes back decades, with designers and architects and even just the people that came out of the Wright organization. Basically, how do you open up and make the lakefront available and program the lakefront from a community and public use needs from basically Monona Terrace all the way to Bella? There have been some beautiful plans that have been done over the years. Green space, open space, plaza space, incorporate Old Turnbull Park, maybe be able to do some integration together with the county on the arena. Their idea includes the possibility of a land bridge over John Nolan to connect the county land with the city park. It's right now it is just something they're saying this area needs it. And the reality is you drive in on John Nolan on the Beltway, you don't see the lake until you make the turn after Old Turnbull Park for all practical purposes. That is all closed up. There's a number of existing things there, homes, medical associations, other things that would also be integrated within that. It's a hotel out there. But the idea of being able to open that area up and be able to enjoy it and be able to utilize it is a plan, like I said, that has been around for decades. Now they're taking it on. This is something that Tim and his family are doing from a philanthropic position, to be quite honest with you. They don't own anything around there. It mostly is public land, so they're not going to. This is something that they saw, and they thought that this is something they'd like to get behind and try to work with the community. They've been meeting with a number of the alders in the affected districts. They've also met with the mayor. The mayor is encouraging them to go ahead and form a standalone nonprofit type of an organization. Possibility of either doing it as a standalone private or maybe getting involved and integrated within the city and weighing what the relative merits of both of those would be. I'm saying, Mark, any process can be improved. Your findings should have included. There has been some misinformation that has been floating around. I'm kind of curious that no one has actually called anybody from my staff or from PDC to ask for a clarification, but it happened. This is not an attempt at all to minimize or to eliminate the voice of neighborhoods. And I want to make that very clear because we're now getting editorials in the papers that are assuming that to be the case. We've had a number of neighborhoods that have expressed reservations and concerns. There is a summit that is being pulled together by a number of the alders that I will attend in a couple of weeks. It's going to be on Saturday, the 31st. Trinity Lutheran Church at 9:30
p.m.
9 noon. That if any of the EDC members are interested in coming, let me know and I'll get you the information. But they're going to have workshops there and breakout sessions for the various neighborhood association participants that choose to come. I'd be very interested in kind of giving a small perspective at the beginning of that. What we're looking to do is be able to take a look at the process we have, and I think part of the packet today that Peggy prepared is a revised flowchart of that Brad and planning, Brad and Murphy and the planning department put together as far as what goes on now. And it's really divided into two sides, or two pieces, the pre-application, and then once it's submitted to the city, what happens. The mayor also asked that we take a look at some comps for other cities. We were hoping that the chamber was going to take that on. The chamber has decided that what they will do is do a survey of some other cities in the region and then some representative cities that I think that we've benchmarked ourselves against in the past, taking a look at the concept of what happens once it gets into the city's process as far as things like presumptive approval. If something comes in, it hasn't been approved in 60 days, it's presumed to be approved. And there's a number of cities that do that, and so they're going to try to get a handle on that. For us to be able to go out and talk with 10 or so cities to get a real good handle, and a realistic handle on their planning process is just both cost and time prohibitive for us. It's one thing to go to the city's website and take a look at that website and say, this is what the city does. It's quite different to go into the city and spend a couple of days talking with the banks and the insurance and the law firms and the developers, the chambers and the city staff and the neighborhoods and really getting a good look. So I'm afraid that without having that bandwidth, without having the ability to be able to literally go in and spend a couple of days in each of these cities, to try to do anything more than a cursory look on, for instance, the presumptive approval is going to be difficult. The La Follette Institute did take a look at some cities in the past. They did put some students on that. It is what we have. Once we have a framework or some recommendations, we may choose, it could be up to the committee to do this, but maybe send it out for some peer review. Take those cities that the mayor mentioned or some other cities and send it out to their planning director and to some representatives of their neighborhood and say, take a look at this, let us know what you think of this. And it just might be some interesting feedback as a data point. But I believe that Madison is unique in that its need for involvement, its want for involvement. It may be interesting from an intellectual perspective to be able to compare with other cities, but I think that being able to sit down and take a look at how to play, how are the game plays with one another, and come up with a framework, again, giving everyone a proportional voice that they should have, recognizing that by state statute, land use decisions are in the hands of the municipality and the governing body of that municipality. And then going forward with a suggested framework and having a public discourse and discussion about it is the way we should go. So that's where we're at. We're right now soliciting feedback. Planning Commission has asked me to speak to them next week, which I'll do. Landmark Commission will also be at both next Monday. speak to anyone that would like to have me come and explain both the rationale and what our goals are as far as being able to get this all put together. But I do want to make it very clear, this is not to push someone aside as far as having a voice. This is trying to take any process and try to improve that process and understand exactly what it is we need to be doing going forward to be both competitive, to be responsible, to not give up our standards, to be more efficient and predictable.
Mark, have you submitted a revised realistic timeline to the mayor or developed one internally?
No, we're sticking with the one we put into the memo, which puts it to the submitter of a package to the Common Council for induction on October 19th. Are you asking if that's realistic?
In part.
In part, yes, it is.
Okay.
Is that on the panel? I saw that at one point. Is that on the back?
It was part of
the side of that.
It's on the second.
On the side of the next page.
Okay, there, right there.
I've had a couple of people talk to me about this, and they pretty quickly got into a conversation, some folks did, about what are the grounds on which the Landmark Commission, for example, makes their choices. And I guess I never thought we were ever going to get into that. I kind of thought we were up at a higher level about how things move between and among those agencies and looking at efficiencies. But I think some people are afraid that we're going to try to go in and tell the Plan Commission what criteria they should use and tell the urban design what criteria they should use.
Personally, I don't think we should do that. I agree that we should kind of stay at a little bit higher level and set some frameworks up for both the pre-application and the what happens to an application once it gets into the city. I know Landmarks on their own is taking a look at the Landmarks ordinance. Planning Commission and Urban Design or any other commission has the ability to be able to do that. But I think our real role is not to go in and try to micromanage either the commissions or getting down into fire inspection. That is not our purview. And our purview is to try to put some predictability around this, realizing that we have a number of constituencies from the city itself to the neighborhoods to the investment community, the developers, to the end users, to the residents, to the businesses, and try to come up with a way of making that as smooth as possible. Also, realizing that 95%, if not more, of the projects that are proposed into the city go through just fine. It's the defining ones, the large ones, the exceptions to zoning, the exceptions to the rule, but that have a tendency to be able to define what a city is, that run into difficulties. People were very quick to cast this as a pandemic response. I don't believe it's a pandemic response. There were issues facing the community and development and approval well before the Edgewater raised its head. And if we don't do anything, let's be honest, the measure of success is everybody's going to be a little bit pissed off. Yeah, we're not going to make the developers happy.
We're already there.
Then let's declare success. The city should not roll over for a developer and roll over for anything that comes down the pipe. Nor should it give up its statutory requirement to be a land use decision making body. The neighborhoods should be able to stand up for what it is that they feel that they would like without losing sight of the fact that the city's role is to balance short-term wants with long-term needs going forward. So there's a lot of balancing act here. Nobody's ever going to be completely happy with this. But can it be approved? Can it be approved from a predictability perspective, from a time perspective? Time is killing some of these investments, and we all know that it costs a lot of money. The constant referrals back and forth, going back and having to come. back numerous and numerous times to get things done. The cost to both the development and to the city resources is huge that nobody's really ever documented. We know it anecdotally in a number of cases, but you know, if we have the resources to be able to do a cost benefit analysis, I would be shocking to find out what the process costs in being able to move it through the system.
Pardon me for interrupting me. I'm trying to find the alcohol license for both of you. You say it's 201.
Room 201 across the street. The city can handle it.
Thanks very much.
Second floor.
We're not taking that process on
tonight. Not tonight.
Is there something I didn't know?
Well, Walgreens is not on our agenda.
I wanted to agree. I mean, we shouldn't be looking at being talking about processes. A lot of that stuff. Jurisdictions are defined by local ordinance and state law.
Yeah.
So we're pretty good at that. And just in my own limited experience, and I did say this at the last meeting, from a neighborhood perspective, at least my part of town, there's a lack of clarity as to how this procedure works and where their input matters and where that. Once that, where is the decision made, at which point they, I don't want to say they have to back off, but they, what are the appropriate points where they should be showing up?
Right, and that's, I think, the price.
You know, like I was, we have the Hilldale Apartments, that's at UDC right now, and when people were asking me where, if I don't like the idea of this building, I don't like the idea of these apartments, where do I go? So the Plan Commission, you can go to Urban Design, but it's really not their bailiwick. But in the past, most things is a good economy. We had people were just opposed to a project in principle, under design, planning commission. And so some of that structure could be clarified, and as I said before, too, the neighborhood plans, their relationship to the comprehensive plan. Like we really need to understand that. We're going to be asking everybody to do these things. Neighborhood to do them, we need to know what it means. And right now, I don't know if we have that clarity. Even the ones that were passed within the last year.
No, I think we need to come up with a better uniform framework and realize the plans are just that. You know, if I were to ask you in 19, were you born in 1985?
That young.
My eyes are getting bad. Were you planning on getting an alder for the city of Madison? You would have laughed. And yet we have neighborhood plans that are 1985. We've got to recognize that times change, the competitive landscape changes, the economics of development change dramatically. And you know, is there a way of being able to work through that with the idea that we still do have, you know, we've got to put something on paper. We have to have some idea of where we're going, but how that works within the process itself, and how you have that input to be able to discuss those changes, as opposed to have a plan that is cast so deep in granite it can't be changed. That's a policy question on your part, and it's a process question on what we're trying to take a look at.
Well, with that, you know, the neighborhoods, speaking as someone who developed a plan and working with people who are trying to start developing one right now, in several neighborhoods at once, actually, knowing that relationship and understanding what their recommendations mean is very important, and it's only critical whether or not they would pursue it. So I think that's something we should make a recommendation on as we go forward. For example, we can use the mayor about it and say that we do need to clarify that because comp plan. When we were developing our plan, we were told the comp plan is, this is an amendment to the comp plan, this is supplemental to the comp plan. But other times it was, well, it's advisory to the comp plan, and it makes a legal difference now.
Yeah, I hope to be able to, within the body of it, and I've been working very closely with Brad Murphy on trying to do this, to try to get in one place an explanation of how these pieces interact with one another and where the decision making and where the exceptions would have to be depending on the project that comes through. But I asked five people what the relationship is between neighborhood plans and comp plan. I've got five different answers right now.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I guess that's a good goal to clarify that. It would be interesting if you could, for a future meeting, background, maybe into the public domain, what is the current, what's the right answer?
Let us assume that there might be one. We may have the opportunity to define it. without getting involved with the city, without getting the city attorney to write a 35-page opinion, we'll try to get it down to something less than.
Which would not necessarily even be internally consistent.
Julie, did you have
a question? I do. And more about the information that you're trying to gather, I think I have two basic questions. One is, where are all the complaints from people about the process already?
It comes mostly from the investment in the development community and from the public at large who feel that at any given time they're either not included in the discussion or they're not being represented in the discussion. I mean, there's
my
is a question about where
physically, where are they?
Mm-hmm.
Where can we read that? Can we see what people are saying?
Oh, you can see it in the Bureau report 2004.
I would like to have that. I don't
oh, I thought you had it. I'm
sorry.
Sorry.
I missed it.
Here you go.
Okay. Okay, next question.
I'm sure. I thought all that had been distributed prior.
Yeah.
There's
it
the
did.
There's
it
the
did.
Okay.
This is the 2004 complaints?
There's the 2004.
Right.
There's the La Follette study.
There's been.
And there's a lot of anecdotes since then, but there isn't
or
necessarily,
or
I think, unless someone would submit a formal written complaint.
Okay.
It might not necessarily be.
And some of it is interesting. I have someone come in and chew my ear off about problems that they perceive they're having. That's one side. There's the other side, that there's no problem. The answer is the truth is somewhere in the middle. Ask them to come and discuss it with the mayor or with an alder or with the committee. Can't do that. Don't want to do that. So a lot of this information is anecdotal,
okay.
And it's what we're going to have to live with.
If I may, if we're relying on the chamber to get data from other cities, I'm not sure that works for me as a whole. I think it's a great supplement, but I think in this day and age, there are ways to communicate. I doubt the chamber's going to go spend 2 or 3 days in 10 different communities to help us find the
communities
either. So is there some thing that we could do on our own, maybe we're talking with one or two other very similar communities that would help give us a little insight as to maybe something like this at what they're doing now?
The chamber is very clear because of that problem they're going to have. They've asked Gleason, Sue Gleason, to work on a project just looking at the presumptive approval. So they're not going to get anything else. The mayor's request to us was to really kind of benchmark what other communities are doing. I just don't have the staff to be able to do that, given what else we're involved in right now. And we don't have the ability to be able to put out an RFP to have a funding to put out an RFP to do that kind of study. The other issue is, what kind of information are you really getting? You look at our process, and it looks like one thing on a piece of paper. In practice, it's an entirely different situation. I feel that if I were doing a research project, the only way that I could get accurate information is literally to go into the city for a couple of days and do a series of interviews. That just isn't in the ballpark for the resources that we have available to us. And the question I have, the question we can talk about at some point, is that really necessary as far as designing a process that works for the city of Madison? Are we able to get ideas from other places? Yeah, and we'll try to do that as best we can. We'll talk to other communities within Wisconsin, because there are some statutory frameworks that are peculiar to the state of Wisconsin as far as power of the Planning Commission and other things and relationships that just may not exist in Portland. It may not exist in Boston. We're going to try to get as much information as we can. If we can discover some new ideas of how things are done, we'll certainly do that also. But just like every development project is different or a little peculiar, depending on both the project itself and where it's going within the city, so I think is every development process with every different city.
I think the hope was to look at the city of a similar stature that we might aspire to look like and be like or are like, and at the same time, find a better, more predictable, more time.
hours. And there's a number of other variables. If you're going into a community that's got a median household income that's twice that of Madison, the developers there are willing to do some things that might be different than what they're willing or able to do here from a financial perspective. So the variables become all over the place.
I do think there is a set of communities that are benchmark communities for us based on economics, and that's the group that Thrive uses. And they publish an annual economic development benchmark report that compares us to 6 or 7 other communities chosen specifically because they have the same economic profile, the same demographic profile, the same, you know, size of community. So I think that, and we have a lot of data about those communities already, saying, you know, what's poverty like in those communities? What are the schools like in those communities? What's the average age? What level of people in the community have insurance? Which donor? That Thrive report is extensive and is constantly being updated. So that's one way to think about it, not to just try to pick groups out of a hat, but to go to a group that's been doing this for the last 4 or 5 years and gathering data. We've got a set that has some prima facie reasonableness to it.
That's going to give you a statistical abstract. I don't think it necessarily tells you anything about the kind of information that we're looking for to be able to compare. And I agree with Julia that information would be extraordinarily valuable, but I also agree with Tim that it would be very difficult to obtain, because any city can send us their version of this, but I don't think you could get any concept from this of what the reality is. It's like an elephant that you're going to get a different version of the reality even if you talk to, you know, 6 different people from each of those 6.
But I guess on this point of data, and I think and Julia's first question about the actual complaints raised this as well, there may not be data we can easily compile from other cities and how they do things, but there should be, and I hope that the report we're going to have in front of us will have some of sort of beyond the anecdotes of actual data about things we can know. You know, how many projects have gone through this review process in the last year, in the last 2 years? How many total? How many have been approved? How many were denied? There's complaints about how long the process takes. So what is the average amount of time to go through the process? Are we able to quantify, you know, that it takes 45 days to get through the plan commission stage on average with certain projects? What kind of projects are those? I mean, there's some of that data that even if we just did a sample of projects that have come through the city over the last year or 2 years, there should be some of that data that we can get to. Because I'm not really comfortable having just anecdotes without any sort of background at all about what are the actual facts of what we're talking about here. If the complaints are the process is too long, I'd like to know how long does it really take? And if the complaints are that the process is so cumbersome that projects can't get approved, how many have really been denied? I'd like to know that. And it seems like some of those facts we certainly can quantify and have in front of us for our discussion.
We actually, I think Brad put out a document, or at least a note, a couple of months ago, talking about once they got a formal application to the city, what is the average time for approvals? And we might be able to break that down more. But that's only half of the equation. Again, anecdotally, there are projects that have been modeling
see, these are the projects that went through, or at least started the formal application. How many times did it go to UBC Planning Commission? Did it go to council, get referred back, things like that? Can quantify that relatively easily. Missed opportunities is a different measure. But this first one, this idea of looking at, frankly, it's even looking at how many times did projects go to commission. And if we see something stand out, like any one or two has several appearances for lots of projects, maybe that's where we need to look and say, is there a problem here, as opposed to this real process?
If I may, I think that there are essentially two issues with the draft, and one is the current process more efficient, and two are there other things we could suggest that would be more efficient or perhaps better as a recommendation. Right? I mean, there are essentially two different things we're looking at, and I think that we have to really look at what can we do to make this more efficient. I think that's one of the things we're going to examine given our limitations.
I think we should look at the scope of opportunity here, better the process, improve the process, based on all the data we're going to be seeing and some that we've seen already. You know, one statistic would be interesting is of the projects that are built, or improvements that are made, how many go into a permitted use immediately in the decision tree process, and how many fall into a conditional use, and then require all of these additional layers of approval. Is that unusual for a city of our size, or is that not, and you know, but I don't know the answer to that. But one comment we hear periodically is we have so many things that get kicked into that bucket that require further review, regardless of size. That might make us a little bit unusual.
And some of that may be addressed by the zoning code rewrite that we're going through now too. Here, I mean, there's a couple things that are coming together, and then it's going to flesh itself out over the coming couple of years.
If I recall correctly, Matt, when we were doing the 3 to 5 year strategic plan, was there some software that the city was getting where it allowed residents to enter in complaints? And were those broken down into, like, I've got a complaint about development? Can we use that to kind of quantify or get some beyond anecdotal, some, you know, stuff on paper that might help? The other thing is also, I think, you know, having this, like, neighborhood summit that will allow residents to really chime in and will clarify, as Chris said, well, I'm upset because I don't know where to go complain when this 10-story building that we have next to me would really help me, and then hopefully a staff person or folks, we were there to help document that. So again, we can bring that those discussions to the table to start talking about what are people really complaining about so we can improve, make this more efficient.
I mean, in answer to your, looking for the chair, in answer to your question, yes, there is a recommendation within the 3 to 5 year ED plan that calls for developing a system, whether it include software or not, but developing a system whereby people can provide feedback, both positive and negative, in terms of their interaction with city staff and committees going through the process. There, to date, have been no resources allocated to move forward in that regard.
Any other comments?
I just have a question about the sort of timing on for us in August. Their memo says we're going to get some kind of preliminary report for our August 18th meeting, and then September 1st we get an initial draft report. Are we going to get any writing for that August 18th meeting ahead of that meeting? And I'm just trying to understand what the difference is your vision between that report and the initial draft report beyond whatever feedback we get at the public meeting. I'm curious.
Going back to Mark's point, we may end up having to push that. The original concept of August was to have a compilation of the various responses that we received and to try to put as much of that as we can into common buckets and do a matrix of, you know, where it's coming from and how it's kind of rated. If we're not going to be getting those, that kind of information from the neighborhoods, if they're waiting to do the summit first, that time frame is going to slip. But we had to get some goals on paper knowing that there might be some slippage involved. Yeah.
Tim, do you imagine that what we'll get from staff is, on this issue, on the one hand, something this, something that, some people do this, others do that, or will we get, it is the staff's recommendation that we do A?
I think what we would like to do is put together a kind of a narrative of the situation, what it is currently, and where some of the issues might be, and then be able to present a couple of options of how to address the solution, and then have a discussion around the table with the inputs that we need, and then come up with a recommended option, but probably forward the final report to the council with our recommended option, but also the other options listed in there. So then we'd all have to be able to have, you know, we can put the draft on the table and we can take a look at the situation and the options that we've come up with internally, see if there's some good ideas out there that may be something we didn't think of to address that particular situation, include it, move on to the next one, and be really an iterative process. Here's one situation, here are the options we came up with. Do they address the solution? Are there other potential options to address it? Fine, now let's move on to the next one. Not keep going back and revisiting. That is what I'd like to be able to get to, and I know that staff would like to be able to get to. Whether we'll be able to do that is another question. We're going to try very hard.
I just think it would be helpful to have staff's recommendation. I mean, we'll have more options than we know what to do with, I'm sure, but to have staff recommendation, I think, would be useful.
Are you talking about a process? TV staff, planning staff?
Tim and his staff.
It's going to be ED staff, it's going to be planning department staff, for the most part, and we will come up with the best ideas that we can possibly come up with.
Thank you, Julie.
I struggle a little bit with the fact that we have no anecdotal information since 2004. Would it be possible to do a survey that would be available to people with some of the questions to be able to understand some of this outside of the official public hearing time, or would that be against
rules against it, but what kind of methodology is it sent to, how do we gather it?
It would be available for everyone. I guess what I mean, Mark, and maybe where we're disconnecting is I struggle understanding a process where clearly it says here that the developers come to the city staff at the beginning of the pre-application process, and yet we don't seem to have data on the pre-application process. We're going to be getting data on the formal application process. So when we're talking about meeting people, it seems to me, in my business, I have a folder. Oh, I talked to this person. Oh, these things are happening. Whether it's on my computer or on my desk, I have a folder. Oh, this deal never went through because of it. And I can look at that. And I'm not subject to have that information.
I think you're right about
easily
that.
Available.
You don't have that. Yeah, it doesn't exist.
So I don't know if it's all the people who went through the development process that you sent them to, or the neighborhood associations, or who it is, but I'm frustrated with the lack of information.
Yeah. I mean, the challenge about a pre-application process is it is pre-application, and some of those are very informal. It could be, you know, somebody called an alder and talked about an idea, and the alder said, forget it, it'll never happen, and that was the end of it. Or the developer called the alder and had a conversation, and then, you know, the financing fell through, they decided not to do it, or whatever. I mean, it'd be very hard to track that kind of data. One thing we maybe could do is gather some information from the development assistance team, which is, you know, part of the not every project goes through that, but it is sort of a more formalized part of the pre-application process, and at least go through those agendas for the past, I think it's only been in existence for a little over a year. Only maybe formalized.
No, it's been formalized since I've been here for years, and it's been around.
Okay, good. So there may be more data than I thought. And just try to compile some information about, you know, for everything that was on a DAT agenda, what happened to it? Did it go away? some cases you might get 11 different reasons from 11 different people about what happened, but that might be some quantifiable data. I don't know how practical it is to put that together, but maybe.
Well, we can ask Brad. Also, Brad Murphy, we can invite him for the next meeting.
The only caveat to that would be that typically by the time it appears on DAP, it's like right before someone is ready to apply. So it's not really a pre-application process. It's someone, you know, has been working on a site plan, yada, 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 and they're ready to apply. And they're just making sure that everything is in order before they do. So it won't pick up on
Phone calls that happen before that and everywhere else. Right, I agree. Some of them do come in earlier than that, but I'm sort of thinking about how to address some place where we might have some data to address Julia's concern. I think it's completely valid.
Yeah. I would just say, and maybe you've done this, I'd encourage you to read through the testimony from the public hearings that were held at that time, because I don't think the testimony would be very different if we had that testimony all over again, and I do think that there was a website. I may be confusing this with another project, but there was a website where people could offer their comments when that process happened. So I'm not sure the development process has changed much since that happened.
And
certainly the complaints of it.
While it's project specific, ignore the project itself. I think some of the commentary that came through via the various meetings relative to the Edgewater would probably have asked for those findings. I mean, you can see where the points of concern are for some. Both sides.
Eric, could you find out, I'm pretty sure City Channel recorded all of those public hearings back in 2004. The question is, do they still have recordings?
Even more recently, as part of our plan development, we've had a plan. We had several hearings where certainly a lot of the and written comments as well, where a lot of the commentary was. I mean, so that was just already 2 years ago, but 2 years ago for sure. But those comments might be good to send around again. A lot of them were actual people with their names and their businesses, not sort of financial, but coming forward at least to speak about their experiences.
At least a little less anonymous.
Exactly.
Any other comments or suggestions at the moment?
Well, on the lost opportunities question, I think it's going to be very hard. There's very little signal and a lot of noise there. And it's hard to quantify what are probably a lot of emotional reactions as well. How many are really emotional reactions versus business reactions? What was really a practical issue that this person is concerned about? Is that why they didn't do it? Keep that in mind. It's worth perhaps investigating, see if we can extract information. I personally don't have a lot of control, but I feel like if we looking at our own process and looking at trying to understand what or see if there's anything that stands out, if we're talking about the data we do have, looking at if there are inefficiencies or if that's just, that maybe it's perfectly fine and something's moved through several times.
I was thinking about experiences in my own district. Sometimes developers are really excited about something and then they just vaporize and you don't know really why they disappear.
But in terms of this overall process, we're trying to make it more efficient and more, come up with ideas for making it more efficient, more predictable than it's been. And there are a lot of pieces there, and I'm not sure if I don't see any sense that we have any sort of Pareto effect or 80-20 rule that's associated with this. If we can focus on that, are there certain areas that we can just kind of take a look at, or focus on those areas where we can speed up? If it's the idea of getting an answer faster, making one bit, something more predictable, are there certain areas we can focus on in the process rather than trying to take
stakeholders that are giving us the input from their perspective, where are they? Then be able to take a look internally. Does this match up with what we have either from the current data set or from anecdotal information? And if it is, I think we start narrowing in on what those areas where we can have the greatest impact are. You're right, shaving a day off of a six-month process by in one area isn't going to have the effect of being able to fundamentally change something somewhere else that may make it more predictable, may make it more streamlined.
I just want to be clear on our own process. Tim, you answered my question before, but it sounded like you don't think it's realistic that we'll have some kind of what was called your memo preliminary report.
Well, unless we do a hard cutoff at the end of this month and don't take any more written comments, which I think would be unfair.
Right.
I agree that, you know, 30 days, it is what it is, and it's hard to get together. I would hate to say that we're inflexible not to be able to move this a little bit. Just like hiring a new director, I'd rather get this right then.
Sure. I'm just trying to think of it for our planning, just in terms of and making
once we get a better handle on where we are, we may make adjustments, and as soon as we do, we'll try to pull everyone that we can as far as dates are concerned, and make the adjustments that we have.
It does seem to me that some of these things are flipped. You know, preliminary report to EDC seems like it should come after the public hearings, not before.
The idea of the preliminary.
Well, we have the initial draft. That's what I asked, what the difference is between the preliminary report, which is listed before, and the initial draft report.
Maybe we just need to clarify exactly what those are.
My intention with the preliminary report was to be able to provide you with everything we've had come in and make sure that you have those put together, because I thought that it would be good background material for you when we have the public hearings on the pre-application process and the city approval process that would be scheduled for later that month.
So you're talking about compiling all the input so far?
Compiling the information, we will try to put together, again, a matrix to show the big rocks within this. You need to have as much data as we have, and I want to give it to you in as raw a form as possible, and yet then also try to offer you a compilation just to make life easier, because I've got a feeling it's going to look like one of your
this perk isn't going to be big.
It's not big.
I mean, so in theory, that could just be an updated progress report, right? It would be tonight, but a lot more data and some more.
If we can hit that date, there's a very good chance, given the summit is until the last weekend of this month, that we're not going to hit that date. Or we'll hit that date, and then we're just going to have to kind of work through the public hearings, knowing that we still might be getting some stuff in writing, too, which wouldn't be the end of the world.
Yeah, I mean, it's still a progress report. Like tonight, this conversation is of value. That would be of value, even if it's not honed into a report.
Yeah, as long as Peggy's getting the notes and Matt's getting the notes and they can get all the information we're trying to get, I'm home free.
I'm curious, why did we decide to break up the public hearings on pre-application process and approval process? Is that somewhat set in stone?
That was a recommendation that was discussed with Brad Murphy. He just said, you know, when we really take a look at where the issues are, where the, a lot of the after application is finally made is sometimes a little inside baseball as far as, you know, sign off on building permits and, you know, how things circulate through the city and how they move, as opposed to the pre-application, which is mostly done outside with the individual alder or alders in an area, neighborhood associations, planning councils, and neighborhood business associations. And we just thought that from an efficiency perspective and having respect for the EDC's time, if we were to split those in two, it made a lot more sense.
Well, I agree. It's much more efficient for us. I'm just wondering how many people are going to have to come tonight than to say
there are going to be, I think, some people that will come two nights, and I think most of those will be, especially maybe some of the associations that represent developers might want to come two nights. But I think that one of those will be much better attended than the other.
People may or may not limit their comments to those specific topics. It's happened once or twice before.
And what we try to do is schedule the public hearings. And then
draft report to the EDC, which again is another opportunity for the public to be able to have inputs, as they would have to, you know, when we make the when we make the final proposal package to the EDC. All these meetings are public. All of them have the ability to be able to be addressed by the public. We're looking at the whole issue of what are the two terms? One is a listening session. The other is a
strictly a hearing.
A hearing. A hearing allows the EDC members to actually interact.
No, the other way around.
The other way around. A listening session allows the EDC members to interact with somebody giving testimony or making comments. And we thought that that would be much more efficient and rewarding and beneficial and get more information than it would be just having people come up at every, for 3 minutes at a time and talk.
Tim, it says it's a public hearing.
We didn't really know the difference at the time when we were putting that together.
I hear you.
So a hearing would be people would come and testify and the EDC could not say anything other than thank you for testifying. A listening session will allow the people.
Are we changing it?
Yes, okay. We will.
So these are both listening sessions, 25th and 26th?
Yes.
Yeah, somewhere around those dates. It's interesting trying to schedule things where we have the alders are very busy with multiple committees and commissions. Then I run into things like hunting season. and, you know, football weekend. It makes scheduling somewhat challenging, but we'll try to do the best we can. We want to have as much participation, especially by EDC members, as possible. A question, you know, going back to what Julia said, it is going to be, some of it's going to be anecdotal regardless. Is it within the interest of the EDC to, for individual, or can the EDC individually as members, if we divide it up, gave two names to each and let them talk to people that have been involved in the process, is that something that can be done within our committee structure? I mean, getting first-hand anecdotal information beats hell out of getting third-hand anecdotal information. Is that something the EDC members would be interested in?
When you say people have been involved in the process, what do you mean?
People that have been complaining to me anecdotally.
So people who
have
built
the
project or built elsewhere.
Built the project, advised on the building of the project, been the developer, been the owner, been the investor, whatever it might be. Be able to talk with those people individually, and we have to promise, unless they give permission to disclose, a certain amount of confidentiality.
I think that opens us up to too much variability.
Okay.
It seems like it makes an elephant in the room that we're all blind and can't see, makes that problem a little worse, that we all might have a different piece of it we're sort of blindly focusing on.
I don't know how else to get, there are a number of people, like I said, that will talk any of our ears off individually, but ask them to come in and it turns into, you know, lambs or the tiger, it seems, they scatter.
Well, actually, I mean, maybe that's true. Hopefully, though, we'll get some solid input during these listening sessions.
I think it's important.
Which will add some meat.
I think it's important that we ask not only the, well, let's take two examples. One would be one of the business associations, be it DMI or Smart Growth or the Chamber. Not only, you know, whoever their government relations person is to come and testify, but bring some members that have been affected. Same thing with the neighborhoods. Not just the neighborhood associations, officers, but encourage some neighbors that may not have ever been to a meeting to also come and say, is this important to me? Do I feel represented? Let's get all the information out on the table. Let the cards fall as they may.
I guess to that point, too, I would hope that we're encouraging people who, I mean, there's certainly going to be investors and developers who've been pleased with certain aspects of the projects, who come to you with praise for staff or for others, for staff or for parts of the process or for how a commission handles something.
Funny, we never hear from those guys. But you're absolutely right. There's a good example is the student housing project that was done by the churches over on University Avenue.
Johnson Street, the central station.
Grand Central.
Grand Central.
At Mills and Johnson.
From what I understand, he had a wonderful experience with the city, but he's not the guy that calls me up and talks about it.
To the extent that you can encourage those people that if they want to see progress on their complaints, they need to.
Yes, I've actually had that discussion a couple of times, and I've been accused of being in their face, but that's okay, I'll do that. It's real simple. If they want to get something changed, they've got to show up. It's as simple as that. They can't depend on their association, they have got to be at the table.
So that leads me to the question where I wonder, why are they not willing to? Is it because of fear of retribution from city staff, the mayor? Is afraid of Matt,
yeah.
Or is it because they're just shocked?
It's Matt. when I first read Mark Buehr's report, before I accepted the job or when I was doing my due diligence, there's a piece in there that talks about, these are anecdotal or anonymous comments, because of fear of retribution. I don't care, I don't buy it. It's true. It's true that there's a fear. It's true that there may be some. You know, there are developers that are, and investors and business people that aren't paying in that to work with. And you don't want to work with them. I get that. The city's role is you've got to be able to work with them. You've got to find a way around it. You've got to find a way of trying to get to the point of, let's see if we can make it work, instead of immediately saying, I remember that guy from last year, there's no way I'm going to work with him. There's no way I'm going to do something. And if that's an attitude, we've got to change that attitude. Part of the process is the flow of how things move. Another part of it is attitude, and the attitude on the part of the city, and the attitude of individuals within the city, to be able to take a shot and say, let's see if we can make this thing happen, or let's see how we can make it happen as effectively as possible. Within any kind of an organization, there are some places where you're rewarded for taking that step, and there's other places where you don't get anything from taking that step. We've got to make sure that from an attitudinal perspective within the city, that we reward and we want our people to take that step to see how can we make something happen. And it's not up to us at this point to say whether or not it should happen, but let's take it to the point where it has a shot. That's attitudinal. And that's part of some of the stuff that has come through in some of the reports that we have gotten. Just an attitude on the part of city staff to try to find ways of making things happen.
Any other comments? All right. And then upcoming meeting, right? So in September, we're going to have, in addition to a fair amount of conversation regarding this topic, city funded projects and job creation presentation by Norman Davis. And then in October, we'll have the RPA.
And you just also asked for something
right
on the budget, so we can put that in there. And Michael Gay also wanted to talk a little bit about the business survey, the synchronous that was mentioned at a prior meeting.
Okay, in September, October.
Right. Probably, I think he's available in September, but we'll see how much we have on the agenda.
Yeah, could I ask for a little bit of flexibility on scheduling speakers, just depending on what the workload is?
Right. Yeah, I think this project's top priority. Yeah.
When
we talk about budget being at the office,
yes.
We're just going to have your information at that point, but we have to know how from there to.
No, we'll have your budget request.
Yeah. If Matt doesn't die before that, we will have our budget. Okay.
We already have it, right? So if Matt dies, we can still get it, right?
Don't wish anything bad.
I wasn't. I was just saying, we don't see that as an obstacle in the process.
Matt,
yeah.
And anything else then?
That's
in
it.
Terms of new items?
Just a comment. Some of you are aware that the CNN Money poll came out listing us at 95 out of the top 100. said that, where we do fall apart is things like the ratio of property tax to median household worth. We're higher than the norm. Average median household income, we're lower than the norm as far as the top 10 cities that they measure against. But there's not a darn thing that we're going to be able to do about the number of movie theaters in here when you're talking about a city that's a suburb of Minneapolis. So the way, we don't know exactly how they measure it, but the reality is, in their poll, we went from 1 to the mid-50s to number 95. Don't put a whole lot of stock in. It doesn't matter. It's a headline, and in reality, it wasn't even a headline here in the state, in the city. So I think that you have to take these polls, again, with a grain of salt. And you've got to look much deeper than what the headline is. The headline should not be that Madison is ranked 95th, it's fallen 94 spots. The headline should be that Madison still is one hell of a place to live.
I would need